Welcome to the Digitally Sick podcast.
Hi there, and welcome to another edition of Digitally Sick. With me, Alex Butler from Foundry 3, and the full complement of the Digitally Sick team is here today, which is great. So we have Faisal Ahmed as well. Hi, Fais.
Hiya, how's it going?
It's going well. And hi, Mr. Gate is back. How are you doing?
I'm back. Hello, everybody.
Well, we'll catch up with what we've not spoken to you about all the time, you know, the few pods that you've missed. But today we're going to be talking ostensibly, I suppose, about COVID and the impact it's had on how healthcare professionals are using technology, but hopefully a little bit beyond that, in the sense of whether it's actually shifted the landscape forever with regard to how healthcare professionals utilize technology to manage patients, improve patients' lives. So enough of my rambling. I suppose we'll kick straight off. So Kai, since we've not heard from you for a while, what are your kind of initial thoughts on this? Where would you want to start with?
Well, I think it's been interesting. And, you know, when you look at what COVID's done in the world, it's made us move to have distant relationships and force that through the technology. And I think it's quite a sobering fact, really, that we've all had to embrace it at very high speed to stay in touch with friends and family. When you look at this from the healthcare system perspective, you know, it's been interesting reading the news over the past few months of how hospitals and physicians have had to react to embrace technology to stay connected, to minimize some of the contact. One of the interesting areas that I saw recently was, you know, from a physician's perspective, how they've employed technology on the hospital wards. So if you think about patients being admitted with potential coronavirus and the physicians are moving room between different rooms. Now, if it's a potential case, what they feared is basically transmitting COVID between rooms as they've gone through. So they were having to, you know, get change masks, gloves, and it was adding a huge complexity to them. And in the US, what they quickly moved to do was using a tablet device carried by a gowned physician or a nurse, and the physicians were in another room talking to them using the tablet device, so using whether it's FaceTime or Zoom, whatever they were using, but using the technology to have interactions with the patients, minimizing the risk and minimizing basically the PPE usage, which I thought was an interesting side effect of it. But, you know, this is just one example of how people have had to embrace technology very quickly in their daily practice. And, you know, this just explodes even further, doesn't it? You know, if we look at Zoom as a relative platform was growing with 100 million users, I think, out to 2015. But then over 200 million meeting participants nearly every day in using Zoom technology. And this is healthcare professionals to each other to talk about patient cases. It is, you know, we've seen Google open up things like their collaboration software and their hospital admin software free of charge because they need to keep healthcare systems connected. Microsoft made similar steps. So everybody's had to react very, very quickly. And you can see how healthcare systems have been trying to pick this up incredibly quickly as well. Otherwise, they would fail in the way they operate. So I think, you know, it's one of those things that we've seen this explosive growth. But at the same time, the question is, you know, is this just going to become part of the new normal?
Yeah. I mean, I think for the interesting thing to me is I've had quite a few conversations actually with physicians, both in Europe and in the US, nearly a dozen, facilitated probably because of this situation. Sometimes because they want to develop technology, sometimes because they want support in integrating technology, and sometimes, you know, for other reasons. And one thing for sure is there was a lot of barriers to use of innovation and new technologies before COVID that have been suddenly dropped, regulatory-wise, insurance-wise, i.e. indemnity to practice through using these technologies, and insurance-wise as agreeing to pay for a consultation through these technologies. But also there's lots of challenges. So whereas in a time of real crisis, good enough is good enough, and even not quite good enough can be good enough. You know, going forward, it's going to be interesting to see, because I think obviously there's loads that will need to happen. It needs to fit within the governance structure that is currently in place, or a new governance structure will have to be built. You know, it's going to have to fit in, technology is going to have to fit into existing clinical pathways and flows, just like it always used to, including, you know, kind of electronic health records and other medical records, electronic medical records, the personalization part. So it informs in each consultation, because not every consultation can work effectively through, telemedicine or through Zoom or whatever. You sometimes need to touch people, or you need to get feedback from that, and that needs to be done. Interoperability is still there. You know, all of the different APIs that are going to be used, you know, something that can actually effortlessly in any way integrate all of that data, you know, is going to be tough. And finally, obviously, there's the security part, where in a time like this, that's kind of put to one side, should I say, with regard to both cybersecurity in the sense of how safe is patients' data, but also security with regard to giving clinical advice over WhatsApp, for instance, and looking at, or giving a consultation through the technology. So I think that it's amazing, because it's going to open up the opportunity to see what works and what doesn't. But I think because we're in such special times, I think all of the blog posts about how the world is literally never going to be the same again in health for technology because of this, I think are a little bit premature. Although, of course, I want things to change massively. Faiz, what about you? What about your thoughts, your opening gambit?
Do you think it's premature because they don't want to spend too much money with AWS?
It's been interesting, though, because, you know, some hospitals, for example, deployed Amazon Alexa very quickly, because what they saw was the ability, using a cheap device or relatively cheap device, to put that in patients' rooms to enable two-way conversation. So, you know, different places have adopted the technology in different ways. You know, we've got some hospitals in the US where they've been using chatbots, for example, to do pre-screening to try and work out who really is with coronavirus and who isn't. So using that chatbot and collecting that data and processing that data behind the scenes, it does open a whole range of questions, Alex, to be quite honest, because we've probably devalued privacy to some degree.
Yeah.
In the nature of speed, but that's just one of those things that will always come back round to look at how we maintain that. And, you know, there's examples of this bubbling away in the world at the moment are the NHS and its app, and how it centralizes the information, mm-hmm. versus Google and Apple with its decentralized information. So, you know, there's different ways, different companies are taking different approaches. But there will be a point where we have to come back and address this. But I think for the state of the emergency that we're in and trying to just maximize patient care and manage the health services, these things get downplayed because then we have no choice, but then we have to bring it back at some point.
Yeah, I agree. Go on, guys, go for it.
Kai, because we've talked about this previously as well, Alex and I, but what's your thoughts on the regulations? Because the regulations aren't keeping up, are they? So when Alex mentioned WhatsApp, obviously there's a lot of people, you can't do WhatsApp with doctors because of regulations. That's just one example of 1,000.
I mean, when you look at it, to be quite honest, Faiz, people will use whatever technology they can to move as quickly as possible to support patients and to support each other. We know WhatsApp's been used. We know Microsoft Teams has been used. We know Google Hangout, whatever has been used, basically, because it's been a rush. Zoom's been used. And look at how many iterations we've had of Zoom because of the privacy concerns and the security concerns around Zoom. So we've embraced it incredibly quickly. In terms of it becoming normalized, that will be the next question. And the regulations will have to catch up. There will always be that concern, in the same way social media was a concern that we shouldn't be sharing patient case studies and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. You can do it as long as you don't give all the personal identifiable information away.
I don't think regulations are even trying to catch up, because I don't think they're wanting to.
I think in this case, it's I don't think the regulations have even come into it at the moment.
That's what I mean. I don't think it's an issue. The point I was trying to make is that at the moment, people are doing the best they can. Nobody needs to worry about the terms and conditions of Alexa for patient communication at a time when essentially we're in crisis.
Yeah.
And also with regard to AI and chatbots, I mean, some of the leading chatbot developers or technologies are being used by J&J and by British Airways. And they're machine learning algorithms. And essentially, for a long time, they get things wrong. With COVID, it's a relatively straightforward machine learning program because there's very specific things it's looking for. But you try using technology like that for differential diagnosis in oncology or in rare disease is a whole different thing. So, you know, I think this situation is exposing people to the possibilities of how you can use technology. Yeah. We'll push people on in some areas where it should have been implemented, quite frankly, 10 years ago. And it will highlight the challenges that need to be overcome by everybody. And I actually think that the regulators will see that in order to keep up with healthcare systems, you know, and I'm talking about regulators from a pharma, but also regulations within healthcare itself, I think they'll see that they'll have to make some changes. But at the end of the day, you know, even in the vaccine space, where we're looking at a vaccine and talking about massively fast-tracking the normal safety protocols with regards to the trials, they won't completely go through those because you can't inject people with a vaccine at the scale we would need to for COVID-19 without having any understanding of its safety profile. I suppose my point is that the people just like the blog post that just, you know, instantly say everything's changed are probably people that don't know much about healthcare or the challenges of healthcare, you know, in my opinion.
Yeah, I do think there's going to be a deeper rooted problem that comes out of the back of it, though, which technology has a role to play, but it could also be its own downfall, which is when we come through this and society has to pick up, you know, look at the amount of money that governments have pumped into trying to just keep people in lockdown, keep people with food on the table and everything else.
Yeah.
You know, if you take the UK alone, during this period, our income tax contributions and everything that goes back to the taxation system, which ultimately pays for the NHS, is completely wiped out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You know, everybody who's in the gig economy is not contributing back at the moment. You know, it's just a disaster for them and for future state. What you've got then is this, well, we're saying that we need to pay and fund the NHS and healthcare systems more. We've shown the inadequacy of contributing to it. But as we come out the back of this, we're going to be in a bigger debt situation than we've ever been in, and we need to pay that down. So where do you make the cuts? And the biggest cuts have always been back in healthcare, et cetera. So it's almost like a double-edged sword that the money's going there and at the moment to try and just get us through this. But when we come out the back of it, it's not going to be there. And if we get these, what we'll see is these technologies playing a role in decreasing, you know, diagnosis time, for example. And I get it, Alex, you know, totally COVID could be a series of quite simple questions that lead to the diagnosis. But when you apply this in more complex situations, it's going to take greater depths of training, et cetera, in terms of machine learning, AI. But who's going to fund that? Who's going to provide that? And if it's private companies doing this and then trying to sell this back to healthcare systems, they're going to have to price this incredibly accurately, because healthcare systems' budgets in the future will be incredibly squeezed because there will be no money back in the system, I think, is the frightening worry from some other aspects.
It's an interesting point because obviously I've certainly not meant to sound negative because this has been my kind of obsession for a long, long, many, many years. I think one of the things that will be really interesting and incredibly positive is that the healthcare systems will have to and will want to embrace different data than they currently do. So, for example, when it comes to diagnosing a heart condition, if you've bought your own Omron blood pressure monitor and you've been monitoring with the app for, you know, possibly a year, 6 months, that data is almost put to one side, and they'll do the blood pressure in the surgery, and then if you don't like it, they'll put you on a trace. Whereas actually, that X7 smart, you know, blood pressure monitor with the app is actually just as good a technology. So the question, I think, I know why things have done like a global survey, or at least I think it is a global survey, looking at data they can collect from people's devices in the home at the moment. So, you know, activity, weight, the usual stuff, sleep, exercise, temperature, even depending on what they're using, you know, even things like nighttime breathing and heart rate. I suppose the point is that actually, can we action a lot of the stuff that we've been talking about for many years, as in the way that you can measure and monitor your own health, to actually feed into a healthcare system, to actually make it more efficient and actually, a better, more patient-focused environment? Because at the moment, there's so much inefficiency in the way things are diagnosed and the way people are then monitored and managed. I just think there's a real opportunity for companies that have struggled previously, like Withings, in the sense that they were bought by Nokia and then spun out again, and other companies that find it hard to to understand how to monetize their product, like AliveCor and the ECG and all the rest of it. I think there's some real opportunities for this stuff to actually be embraced and actually taken on by healthcare, by governments to support healthcare systems.
I think you'll see the second wave, won't you? You'll see the second wave of all those tech companies that were around a few years ago. A lot of it actually is a finance conversation. And it's like the previous recession where digital was a cheaper option. Digital people embrace that digital option as well. So that's another thing to think about.
It's not just about it's the smarter option. It's how we use the technology to make decisions more effectively or stay connected more effectively, isn't it? Because, you know, when you look at things like the airline industry, people are not going to travel the way we used to travel, and they're going to be hurting. So, and you could say many companies now are not going to, you know, why do we need to fly around the world to have meetings when actually companies have managed to survive using technology to work remotely?
Yeah, that's happening.
You know, in hospital systems, can the technology work for them that they possibly deferred deploying previously? Can they really make it work for them to make them more efficient, more effective, and just give them those improvements that they need? But like you say, you know, for some of the bigger tools and services that people are trying to develop and then put into healthcare, they're going to have to think incredibly wisely around how they do this, because I think healthcare systems will be incredibly squeezed over the next 5 years.
Yeah. I mean, I'm thinking to myself, when you think about how much clinical costs are of someone going to even a GP surgery, taking up that person's time. And then if they do get diagnosed, say, with something like high blood pressure, the cost it takes to put a trace on them, and then they have to go back to the surgeon, this and the other. I mean, I wonder what the cost would even be of providing every single person, say, in the UK, and this isn't normally very UK focused, but just specifically, with a blood pressure monitor, with a connected, you know, application that goes with it, they can download to their phone, that everyone over 50 gets. And then, you know, what you're then doing is you'll be tracing and diagnosing early. God knows how much blood pressure. Blood pressure treatment is relatively cheap, if not always hugely successful. You know, I suppose I'm thinking, do we think differently about how we even cost healthcare? You know, do we start to think about these things as massive preventative programs, freeing up healthcare professional time and space to do not more important things, but other things that they have to do face to face, I suppose, is my point.
Well, you look at how healthcare systems have had to move quickly to remote consultation.
Yeah.
You know, this is something that Babylon in the UK has been trying to drive for a while. And all of a sudden, doctors' surgeries do not want patients presenting themselves. So they've moved everything to either a Zoom call or a telephone call to do that triage. So, you know, they've been forced to take almost like the Babylon model to a degree anyway because of the situation. Why wouldn't they keep that going in the future?
The interesting thing about that is, you're so true. So it comes back to money again, because, I mean, you know, with Babylon, the fear for NHS trusts was that essentially all of the patients that you get paid for are going to be moved over to Babylon, and the people you don't get paid for, or you aren't cost effective to you, my apologies, don't. I.e. that someone that you don't see very often but occasionally needs to see you, you get paid for just as much as someone that's coming every week. And so I think that they'll have to change the way that these things are done, in this, a bit like, you know, the indemnity that a healthcare professional will need to do to practice like that and to be paid either by the NHS or by a health insurer to do that. You know, this infrastructure changes.
Yeah. So do the government launch or buy someone like Babylon? That's another big question. So they can scale it up for everyone.
But it's not so much the scaling it up. Like I was saying, it's actually how GPs get paid.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, that's the thing, because at the moment they are private businesses that work within the NHS family, and they get paid for a patient, and obviously for lots of other things as well. But, you know, it's most basic form. And so Babylon's most used by younger people who want a relatively rare interaction with healthcare services, whereas your 80-year-old with person with loads of comorbidities is not at the moment likely to be using Babylon.
Yeah. So sure both will work in the future.
Yes. I mean, hopefully, yeah. I mean, as people our age get to 80, hopefully we'll still be able to use this stuff.
I feel like I'm 80 already.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. So what do we, I suppose it's really difficult, isn't it, this kind of crystal ball stuff. But if you were to kind of, you know, both of you, and obviously not at the same time, were to sum up what you think the major implications of this will be going forward, what will stay, what will change, what maybe won't, on what maybe the challenges are, however you want to take it on, but what you think this is, the impact this has all had.
I mean, from my perspective, I see, you know, the technology playing a part in our future life for some time to come, because it would be, we're going to be stuck with social distancing impact for a good while yet. That technology's got a role to play, and I think the more we use it like that, the more it will just become normalized. So it will be harder to remove some of the interactions that we have and some that the healthcare systems are using at the moment. So I do think we will see an acceleration and adoption of it, which is potentially to our benefit in terms of society and access to healthcare. But I do think in other areas, what we may see is a risk of some of the larger opportunities taking a longer time to come to fruition because healthcare systems just won't have the money to put them in.
Yeah, yeah. Faisal, do you want to have
anything? Yeah, I think the technology is going to accelerate massively, because obviously if it's a good piece of technology, that why would you want to go back if you've had that really good experience? And just with Kai, I'm just worried about the big projects or the big costing projects like machine learning or AI to do it properly might be delayed, but hopefully they won't. They might say, let's take a long-term view of this. This might help save a lot more money over the long run versus short-term thinking.
Great. Yeah, thanks. Yeah, I mean, obviously I agree with all of those things pretty much.
I think you should disagree, Alex.
I'd say that again, sorry.
I think you should disagree.
No, I don't. Well, I mean, I do kind of with some of it, but I just can't be bothered to talk about it.
And that's the position of holding a great debate, isn't it? Oh, I'm too tired to argue with you.
Actually, that's not true. No, of course I agree. I think what I don't particularly like is the very simplistic black and white perspective that people put on things. Because at the end of the day, at the moment, everything has been put on hold in order to try and get through this horrendous crisis. And there will be things we'll be able to learn from that. I think acting and working at speed, being prepared for things to not work perfectly straight away, being able to innovate and do things differently, get orthopaedic surgeons are doing consultations through Zoom, for goodness sake. And I think there will be an acceptance of the kind of technology that's been around for a while now needs to be, you know, utilised. If you can do an ECG of comparable quality on your phone, then that needs to be utilised, as does a whole load of other technology that isn't really being utilised at scale at the moment. So I think there's a lot will come out of this, and hopefully, you know, it, like you say, Kyle, it'll be for the good of society in the future that people get to see these technologies more. People might be recommended by their doctors to do something that they wouldn't have recommended to them before. So it's going to be good. But obviously, first, we've got to get through this horrendous situation that we all find ourselves in. So yeah. So well, that was really interesting, Kai. I hope that everything's going okay for, you know, for everyone. I'm slightly going mad now after the sixth week of being locked down, but I'm very fortunate to be in the position I'm in, so I'm certainly not going to complain.
Is it the sixth week, really?
I think so. It feels like
What do you recommend to watch, Alex?
You mean on TV?
Yeah.
I'm doing film reviews.
I purely watch high-end European documentaries and art house cinema, so I'm not the best person.
There's nothing to recommend watching. It must be a high-end European documentary you like.
This was like Mark Kermode's film review session.
I love Wittertainment, and I'm going to stick to what I know something about rather than in any way dabble in things that I'm not really qualified. I don't think people want to know my taste in box sets. Cool. Well, it's good to have you back, Kai. Hopefully, we'll
great to be back. Thank you.
No, it's absolutely crazy for you at the moment with lots of things going on. So, hopefully you'll be back on future ones. And when this all calms down, obviously back absolutely full time. So yep. It's good to hear from you. And thanks for coming on today. Vise, thank you for your time.
Cool. Yeah. Don't forget to.
Yeah. So, I've been Alex. And thank you for listening to Digitally Sick. You can do all the normal things. Please, if you like us, then obviously subscribe. Give us a rating if you would like, and if you have any thoughts or ideas on this, or even would like to come on the pod and talk about something, then please get in touch and let us know. We'd be delighted to talk to you. Other than that, thanks for listening, and we'll speak to you again soon.